Oh, hey, how are you? Great to hear. Yeah, come in. Make yourself comfortable. Like a drink? Sure. There you go. Welcome to the Tech Lounge. Shall we begin? Hello, everybody. Welcome to another Tech Lounge. This episode is coinciding with an announcement from earlier this week where the Open Source Initiative, the body responsible for creating the definition of open source software, have announced version 1.0 of the open source AI definition, something that I think many are looking for and wanting right now. And I am speaking in this interview with Stephen Hood from Mozilla about their involvement with creating the definition. I think Stephen was using some kind of Bluetooth microphone, so the audio's a little unclear, but I've done my best to clean it up. Enjoy. Before we begin, there's just a few people at the door who've got some things they want to tell you. Then we can get stuck in. If you'd rather not hear these interruptions, then please support the show. You can find details in the episode and show notes. So Stephen, open source AI, let's start a little bit with, I don't know, I feel like with any discussion on AI at the moment, we need to have a little bit of a conversation about what we even mean by AI.
I agree.
In terms of your job role, which is fairly recent, so we'll come into that in a minute. Mm-hmm. What is AI in the remit of this role?
What is AI itself?
No, in the remit of in the scope of this role, because you know, there's what a lot of people from the past year or so think of as AI, but it goes much further back. So.
Certainly, it does. I think you're right to call that out. Right now, the focus right now is really around generative AI. Mm. This latest generation of technologies is really starting with transformers.
Yeah,
that have triggered so much progress and innovation in such a short period of time. The focus, my focus, leading open source AI projects for Mozilla is to help us do our part to ensure that the open source world has competitive technologies compared to closed source for-profit companies so that open source doesn't fall behind in capability in this rapidly evolving space.
And I think we should probably unpack a little. I'm asking some leading questions, but we should, you know, when we talk about open source software, there's different definitions of what open source means, but you know, broadly speaking, crossing all the definitions, it's usually code that you can inspect, hopefully contribute to, hopefully run kind of generally how you want. Mm-hmm. But in open source AI, it's a little different, isn't it? What is open source AI then? Let's get to the next big topic.
Well, this has unfortunately been an unresolved question for a while now, and it's led to some issues. We have regulators and governments proposing or writing legislation that talks about open source but doesn't operate on a common definition of what that means. And we have for-profit companies claiming they are open source, but in doing so really watering down, I think, what most people would assume is a reasonable definition of it. For their own, you know, benefit, to push back against competition, to put themselves in a better position in the market. So this is why the work of the OSI these last couple of years has been so important, and why Mozilla has been involved in it. I think the main difference from AI versus traditional software, when we define open source, is that it's a multidimensional problem. When you're talking about AI, it's not just the code, it's not just the source code. That is not sufficient to consider the entire breadth of an AI system. You also have the weights that power the model that you're using. You have the data that was used to train that model in the first place. And you have the documentation of all of that that allows you to understand how it works, use it, and modify it.
It's funny because a few years back, before this current sort of transformer generation, I actually appeared on a panel with someone from Google and some other people. I can't quite remember. The person from Google was around quite a lot at the time, so I sort of remember them. And at the time, the phrase was explainable AI. And is this sort of a similar idea? You know, even if, you know, technically speaking, sometimes it's hard to crack open some of the models for the general person. But if something is explained, is that open?
I think it's one aspect of it. I don't think it's enough on its own. It is important. I mean, source code is what allows us to understand how a technology works, right? The source code is the explanation. It's also the means by which you can use and modify and share the technology. So we just have to, we've had to figure out what the equivalent is for the other dimensions of AI beyond the source code itself. And weights themselves are not particularly explainable on their own because you can't really tell exactly what went into them and how they were trained. There's a number of examples of this beyond just the data itself that's used to train. There's also the decisions that a model maker makes during the process of training a model. For example, deciding what sort of alignment mechanisms to build in, right? What sorts of questions will it answer, will it refuse to answer? So there's a lot of things that go into making a model and sharing that big multi-gigabyte file that you're downloading off of Hugging Face in order to use the model. And those things are not, if they're not transparent, then they certainly aren't explainable.
And it's funny you say this because, you know, if you go and look at a, let's just for the sake of argument say a Git repository, you can kind of see commit histories, commit messages are not always that well written, but you can sort of see what changed and maybe you can extrapolate some motivation and et cetera, et cetera. But from what you've described, it sounds like you're sort of potentially relying on just people telling you, which obviously has nuances and maybe isn't written very well. And it's harder to have that audit trail, I guess. I don't know. Are there any kind of standard methods or processes that illustrate this in a more in a less nuanced way? This kind of thought processes that went in, or
for AI specifically,
for the models, I guess we're talking.
Sure.
About.
Well, one great example is what are called model cards, which is an emerging trend you see on Hugging Face and other sites, where a model provider will write a so-called model card that describes the model. And this is a great example because there's some patterns to what people put in these, but there's no standard and there's certainly no requirements. They're all over the map. Some of them disclose quite a bit of information about what went into the model and how it was trained. Some almost none at all. So is having model cards better than not having them? Absolutely. But does having them solve the problem itself? Not alone. It's a bigger thing we have to address. And that's what the OSI draft recommendation has done, which is to really look at this problem across its whole breadth and take a position on what open source means for all of these aspects. The underlying data, the decisions that were made around its use, the model itself, the weights, code associated with it, the whole thing.
And we should probably very quickly expand that acronym for people listening. OSI is the Open Standards, Open Source Institute, something like that.
Open Source Initiative.
I got this in Bruce Smith there. And they have created the definition of what open source is. So I'm guessing, and is this a partnership, partnership between them, Mozilla, and maybe others? Or
yes, there are others as well. We've been involved with OSI for quite some time.
Yeah.
And we've been involved for the last 2 years in this particular undertaking to define open source for AI. The last year that has had some public feedback components to it as well.
And with things like, you know, I'm going to throw words here, which may not be what you are calling these things, but
that's fine.
Sort of equivalently like working groups, public feedback, calls for proposals, et cetera, et cetera. They can take time and be slow in a sector of the industry that is moving extremely quickly. So how do you pin down a moving target?
Well, this is fortunately or unfortunately, this is not a new challenge. Yeah. Standards are not exactly known for their speed of execution. They are a deliberate process. And I think you just have to, turn that into an advantage. You have to turn it into a benefit. And that's, I think, what the open source community has done historically. the whole point of open source is that it's done in collaboration and consensus. And the OSI's process has been very similar. And I think that's a lot better than a fast, closed-door, proprietary process that's driven just by corporate interests.
Okay. Okay. Let's dig a little bit more into the Mozilla side. So this is Mozilla's, sure. You are the lead, well, the Mozilla Trustworthy AI Principles is the Mozilla term. So what does that mean?
Sure. Well, we think that AI technology clearly is having a large impact. It's affecting the way we use computers. It's clearly going to affect the web. And Mozilla's mission is to fight for a free and open web. And so AI is unavoidably very important to that web into the future. So that's why we're involved. We think that it's very important this technology be, as we say, trustworthy, which means that it is built in the open and it is understandable and controllable, and it keeps humans in the loop. It is not replacing humans. It is actually augmenting, helping us as a tool. And so it is not something that ideally is something that we need to be scared of. It's a tool that helps us. It's in the public interest. That's what we want to get to.
Yeah, and this is, I think that's the bit that jumped at me the most is, yeah, this was always kind of this dream of artificial intelligence that, you know, that will assist humanity. And I can't remember the exact lines, but we see a lot of lines at the moment of like, I thought I would spend less time doing tedious things and have more time for painting and making music, whereas it seems to be the other way around, you know, these guys. Yeah. So I feel like there's a lot of things we can unpack here, but how do you, okay, let's start with the last question first is.
Sure.
Mozilla is reasonably well known amongst kind of open community and for different products and projects. But, you know, why should we trust you? Why should we trust Mozilla in the first place? Let's start there.
Well, the first thing I would say is that Mozilla is driven by our manifesto, the Mozilla Manifesto, and for a number of years that determines and proclaims really the values we operate by and our mission. And you can look at that manifesto and you can swap out the web for AI and walk right down the document. And it still makes a lot of sense. Those same principles matter that we care about on the web. Openness and access, agency, user control, respect for privacy and safety. All these things are incredibly relevant for AI as well. Mm-hmm. And I think, as I said earlier, AI is certainly appears to be having an impact on the web. It seems that it's going to continue to. So we can't consider these things in isolation. Mm-hmm. Another thing I'll say is that Mozilla has a track record of 25 some years of working with the open source community, building together. And so you're not just trusting Mozilla. We are one of many representatives, if you will, or organizers, conveners of the open source movement, one voice in that group.
And I guess let's ask the hard question, and I hope you choose to answer it, but you don't have to. You know, Mozilla has its ups and downs. It is a respected organization, but some of the things it has tried have not always been as successful as I'm sure Mozilla hopes. So, as hoped. So how, again, you are up against companies with a lot of money. How, and some of them, some of them are your funding sources as well. Like, how do you ensure that your voice or the voices you are representing are heard amongst all these very noisy people in the room?
Sure. It's a great question. I'd start by saying that we've been here before.
Yeah.
Right? So this is how this company really started, was in its fight to protect the web from being taken over by Internet Explorer and Microsoft and the sort of creeping proprietization of the web that was happening at that time. And the tools that we used in that fight was, well, one of them continues to be Firefox. Mm-mm. You know, one of the most powerful ways to advocate and drive for change is by making things. Mm. And Firefox has had a tremendous impact there. Even today in the world where, you know, Chrome has risen to have such a dominant position, Chrome is an open source project.
Yeah.
You know, so things have changed significantly. We continue to engage with with Google and Microsoft and Apple on web standards. And we have a very significant and impactful voice in those things. So I think that is the fundamental answer, is the approach we've taken in the past, I think, is as relevant as ever for where we are today, because the same thing's happening. You can see the early signs of it. Mm. It's like what happened to the web back then is starting to happen to AI, where power is concentrating in a handful of these well-financed for-profit companies largely. And you look at the licensing or the way they define themselves open source, and it's very clear to see that they are using these mechanisms as a way to gain control and keep control.
So in terms of the kind of the more practical side, aside from the kind of the campaign, the collaborations with OSI, creating standards, creating a definition, etc., what is Mozilla AI doing? Like, what are you doing with AI? And yeah, let's start with that question. What is Mozilla actually doing with AI at the moment?
Quite a bit. I'll give you a few examples. One is a program we have called Mozilla Builders that we recently launched, which is a program by which we engage with open source practitioners and in some cases academic researchers on solving specific challenges, technology challenges in open source AI, and delivering them in the form of open source projects that anyone can use. Yeah. So we actually just today announced our first cohort for our accelerator under this program. Yeah. There's 14 different projects that are advancing the state of, really the state of the art in open source AI.
Yeah.
Another project you might have heard of is a project called LlamaFile. It's a project we sponsor at Mozilla. And LlamaFile is about democratizing access to open source AI technology. It takes any set of open downloadable weights and turns them into a program, an executable that runs on almost any computer without installation.
Yep.
So these are the sorts of projects that we are either sponsoring or we are developing ourselves to advance open source AI. And then in the Firefox team, I think we have in beta right now in our nightly build, our developer build, we have some built-in functionality for open source based AI, generative AI in the browser that works in a privacy protecting way through the cloud. But also, as a developer, you can run it locally too. You can run your own local AI models.
Yeah.
These are just a few examples. We're doing a lot of work in the open source AI space, actually code.
I can see that digging around on the builder site, local first, is the first headline.
Yes.
And I am a huge fan of running things locally as much as possible. For different reasons, but and it's getting harder and harder.
We want to change that. We want to make it easier and easier.
I'm obviously speaking to a company that is largely known as a browser maker, but I really dislike doing everything in the browser. I like apps.
Sure. Yeah, I understand.
And so apart from the projects in this cohort, who are some of the other creators, projects that you're working with? You mentioned LlamaFile
is our product.
So are there any others you're working with as a side to just the sort of the definition, the academic treatise? Is there people you're actually, projects you're actually working with?
There are, and I can't quite name some of them quite yet. We will be able to very soon. So
it's not very open.
I know. It's just you haven't, signed the dotted line yet and so forth, but very soon. I'll give you some examples, though, in a more high-level sense. So, one project I can name is called SQLite Vec.
Okay.
So SQLite Vec is an open source project we are sponsoring, independent developer named Alex Garcia, who is adding vector search capability to the beloved SQLite embedded database, which makes it now usable for all sorts of interesting local AI applications, augmented generation. And the LlamaFile project I mentioned, that is the development there is led by Justine Tunney, who's a brilliant independent developer, a former Google Brain, worked on TensorFlow and a bunch of other things. And then there are the things I was mentioning I can't quite name just yet are we are working on sponsorship and collaboration with several academic research groups at major AI institutions. I'll just leave it at that. Where we're going to be developing some new techniques to advance the state of the art for open source AI in some very practical ways.
Okay.
All those in line with that local AI theme that I mentioned.
Yeah. I'd be interested as well to know when you talk about we've talked about local as in running locally.
Yes.
But for example, Mozilla has the other project, the, is it Mozilla Voice or?
Common Voice, yes.
Common Voice, mm-hmm. where you're also focusing on ensuring a bigger diversity in, well, in that particular case, in voices.
Yes.
And one of the other issues with a lot of models at the moment is they are very Anglosphere or Americasphere centric. So when we talk about local, are there also efforts to be more local in a kind of geographic way as well? Or
absolutely, absolutely. So Common Voice has done quite a bit in that area. There are, I think, two or three of the projects we sponsored through our Builders Accelerator announced today are dealing with this problem. One of them is trying to build a foundation model for Swahili, for example.
Okay.
So this is something we care very much about. And on the foundation side of Mozilla, which is the sort of nonprofit parent organization, we do a lot of advocacy work on this issue, and we also support people and groups that are doing work on it as well.
Okay.
Yeah, it's incredibly important. You're right. So much of the, not just the research, but the data that is used is in this space is coming from the Western English-speaking world. And, and way too many of the people working on this stuff, you know, frankly, look more like me than like other people. And like, that's a problem.
Like us, to be fair.
Yes, true, right? Yeah, the me part is you're California-based, you know, technologist, right? Like that's something that needs to be behind you, really.
So yeah,
well, we need a broader set of perspectives and a broader set of knowledge and data going into this, so that it can be truly equitable and useful to people all over the world, not just to the privileged.
How much do you also handle some of that through a lot of the community outreach that Mozilla has? You know, there's the speakers community and the kind of, I'm sure there's a lot of local kind of meetups and enthusiasts. I've forgotten the terminology that Mozilla uses for these people, but.
Well, we have a number of programs. We have our fellows program, fellowship program. We have local community events. We have Moz Week, which is a international event that's coming back, I think, fairly soon here, interrupted by COVID. Yeah. So Mozilla has a number of programs for reaching out to the community.
Yeah, and that can be, how to say, bottom up, because it sounds kind of bad probably from Mozilla's perspective, but feeding back into some of these efforts as well. You know, if a local project comes up through one of those that could suit a future cohort of the Mozilla Builders program, if there's feedback on some of these saying that here's this massive language group in India or Africa that's just not being represented in these tools you have, how can we improve it? That kind of thing. Is there a plan for a little bit of integrated community contribution?
Absolutely. So like we have a Discord server right now for Mozilla's AI community. And that's grown significantly just over the last few months as people have come in from the projects that we are sponsoring or developing, come into sort of a common community space. You know, we have other online fora where people can engage with us. And it's definitely our goal is to build, a new community, a new group of like-minded practitioners and thinkers in this space, much as we have done historically around the web. And I'm sure there'll be cross-pollination and overlap between those.
Yeah.
But this is why something like the OSI draft is so important, is because we all have to be talking a common language.
Yeah.
Right. If we don't know what we mean when we say open source for AI, then the whole endeavor becomes very muddy and people don't really know where they stand. They won't know what technologies they can confidently use and build it upon, whether they're trying to build their own project or start a company, whatever it might be. We need to have that clarity and stability so that the term actually has meaning. And we think that's a key part of building this new community, this new movement that we're talking about here.
So I'm actually looking at this draft right now. It's a draft, version 0.09, so relatively early. And what's needed and when will it become not a draft, I suppose?
Well, so I'm not personally involved in the process of this working group. But obviously Mozilla is. But as I understand it, this is the public comment phase.
Okay.
And so public comment is being requested and is desired and will be considered and integrated. So does this need more work? It's quite possible it does. We, Mozilla, support this draft as it is. We think that it strikes the right balance to be sure that we both have a clear definition of open source for AI, but also one that is like realistic, that is anchored in the realities of the world as it is, so that it can be used, it can have impact. You know, if we have a, if we had a definition that was unattainably difficult to achieve as a practitioner, then it's not going to have the impact we want it to have. And instead, all the people who claim they're open source but really aren't are going to get control. So we think it makes the right set of choices to make that possible as an alternative to that.
So as we kind of draw to an end, I'm going to ask another uncomfortable question, because you sort of sowed a seed of it in my head then anyway. You know, when the open source, well, I don't know if it's when the open source definition was created, but when the initial conversations of open source were happening, it was a different, it was a sort of different time. And we've seen already some kind of misuse, abuse, flexibility around the open source definition over recent years. And we've already mentioned quite a few times that the vested interests in AI, where I'm going with this is like, how do we convince them to care, I suppose? Why should they care? And how do we strongly encourage / coerce them to follow these definitions if they're claiming it?
Well, look, it's a great question. What I would say is Microsoft didn't suddenly decide to care one day about open source. Yeah. They didn't wake up one morning and Bill and Ballmer said, you know what? This is the right thing to do.
Ballmer definitely didn't. So,
they got that religion because we showed it to them. Being the open source community, we led them. We created impact by creating open source software that people used and had practical value and became sort of these linchpins of platforms and stacks and ecosystems. We made it so they could not avoid it. And in over time, they began to see the benefit of participating in it. You know, so I think that's the path. Is it starts with us, the people who are the proponents, but also the practitioners, to create things of importance and value. And we're just at the early days of that. And I think personally, some people have expressed concern. Well, how can we in open source possibly compete with these well-funded private companies? We don't have 10,000 NVIDIA H100s sitting in a large warehouse somewhere like they do. But I think that you can already see, like just in the last year alone, the progress of the open source AI community has been tremendous. And it just shows where a small spark, in this case, Meta choosing to release the Llama weights originally, right? That small spark can have tremendous impact. We just have to together get our story straight about what open source really means and what it's going to mean moving forward.
I don't know if this is a question or a statement, but we could almost argue that if Mozilla's original journey began at the kind of trying to break open the closed proprietary browser market, things move a lot more quickly these days. So we could almost argue we're at that same moment again with, well, not quite yet, but nearly, with proprietary AI, and that the market, the authorities will start to demand that there are alternatives, and it's a perfect opportunity for people to step in and be those alternatives. And we'll see. Because
we will.
We got rid of Internet Explorer, but we didn't solve the problem, did we?
Well, the battle never ends. That's the other lesson, I think, of technology, right? Is that there's always something new, there's always something changing.
Yeah.
And the fight for openness never truly ends. The cost of this power is eternal vigilance.
I mean, ironically, we are speaking through a tool that I am generally not a lover of Chromium browsers, and I'm kind of forced to use one because it's what works best, and that's not open at all.
So, well, I'm speaking to you through Firefox, and it's working just great, I'm happy to say.
But I'm also seeing warnings about that fact. So that's unfortunately it's unfortunately one of those,
the battle continues.
It wasn't what we were promised, was it?
I was promised a jetpack, and I don't have that yet.
I would also bothered about jetpacks, but I would like my choice of browser platform. That's fine.
I will say that I was not sure that I would live to see the possibility of machine intelligence, even at the level we've already seen. So the future is here. It's just not quite what we expected.
I studied it at university briefly, and that was kind of when we were mostly covering things like Eliza and stuff.
Right, of course.
Pretty rudimentary. I mean, I'm not that old, but it was kind of, I think, like Deep Blue and things like that were the kind of highlights at the time. So if people are interested in finding out more, they can go to mozilla.ai. You have a bunch of call to actions here, newsletter, the Discord server. This propensity to use Discord, which is not open for communication, is worrying, but that's a whole other conversation.
Challenging one, I agree, yes. And it's where people are today, and we need to reach people. Yeah. I agree, it is complicated.
Anywhere else apart from mozilla.ai you recommend people start with, or is that the best place to begin?
Mozilla.org, there's a lot of, you can find a lot of resources there. You can find information about our beliefs and positions on trustworthy AI and open source. You get a lot of content from Mozilla.org.
Okay.
You mentioned the Discord server. They have a vibrant community going on there. It's called Mozilla AI. Welcome people to join us there. Also, check out some of our projects on GitHub. Llamafile, I mentioned. You can go to llamafile.ai to learn more about that. And others are listed you can find through our website.
I'm looking at it now, although I think I've already bookmarked it, but I will double check.
Give it a try. It works pretty great. Justine awesome. Has done some amazing work on that project.
Awesome. Stephen, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. It's a pleasure talking to you today.
And that was my conversation with Stephen Hood over at Mozilla about the OSI's new open source AI definition version 1.0 announced this week on Monday, I do believe. As it's an open standard, if you are interested in being involved, then of course you can find out more about how to do that. I will leave some details in the show notes. But that aside, until next time, I have been Christian Schiller, and thank you very much for joining me. So that was it. That was our guest today. Thank you very much for joining me in the Tech Lounge. I have been Christian Schiller. If you want to know more about Tech Lounge, head on over to christianschiller.com, or please tell your friends about us. It's quiet and cozy in here, but the more listeners, the merrier. You can find more at christianschiller.com/podcast or in the show notes or episode notes, wherever you found this podcast. Thank you very much for joining me, and you're most welcome next time.